Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Steve Sloan joins us today from Menlo Park. Steve is a partner at Menlo Ventures, where he has an area of focus in supply chain investment. He's been at the firm for 8 years, and prior to joining, he was previously at Insight Partners. And before that, Steve had a brief stint as the founder of a YC company in 2010. Steve and team have been involved in a whole slew of supply chain investments, including ShipBob, Six River Systems, Scout RFP, Enable, Parade, and Cloud Trucks, amongst many others I could rattle off. Steve, welcome to the Heavy Hitters. I hope you found a way to recover from that blitz of a week out at the Manifest Supply Chain Conference. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was. Thanks so much for having me on. And it was a great conference, and looking forward to doing it again next year.
Yeah, I think everyone's pretty much penciled next February to be back. So if any listeners are interested, Manifest is one to check out. Well done, Pam and crew. Well, Steve, I gave a short summary. We always kick off with introductions here, but give us again the color commentary on what your journey and what led you becoming a partner here at Menlo Ventures.
For sure. I guess it really started back in 2010. You know, when I was in YC, I had a company in the batch. You could think of us almost like an early Google Plus before Google Plus, like a social network built around circles. And, you know, that was a company that was really unsuccessful. I mean, we didn't go anywhere. So the whole, you know, being a startup founder thing, I was like, hey, I'm not so good at that. But being part of the batch and, you know, seeing the success of companies like Docker and PagerDuty and others was kind of an early foray into what it's like to be a VC, where you can, you know, get a lot of pattern recognition, work with a bunch of different founders. And for me, that was kind of an early indication that like VC could be an awesome place to be. And, you know, I think I was fortunate enough to start out at Insight to land at Menlo. And then what I always tell people is just advancing in VC is pretty opportunistic, right? You got to get lucky. You got to be in the right place at the right time. And that was certainly the case for me at Menlo. We were going through our generational transition, you know, storied firm, but moving on from our original partners who had retired, and it just ended up being a lot of opportunity at the firm, and, you know, a little bit right place, right time, you know, ended up being a great run there. And, you know, I've been there 8 years, and, you know, looking forward to the rest of my career here. So it's been a great place.
Right on. Well, great background. Appreciate all the humility, but a lot of hard work over those 8 years for sure. And a very impressive roster of supply chain investments we're going to talk about today. So maybe also to just help set the stage for the listeners, tell us a little bit more about Menlo Ventures generally, obviously a historic fund here, how it's evolved, and then what your specific focus areas are.
Yeah, for sure. So Menlo has been around for a long time, 50 plus years. We're kind of one of the original Sand Hill Road VC firms. We actually got our start in biotech. We incubated a company called Gilead Sciences, which is, you know, one of the leaders in developing antivirals. You know, so that investment kind of put us on the map. And, you know, over the years, we've kind of evolved and re-evolved with different trends. I mean, for a while, we were kind of a hard tech VC, storage, optical networking, you know, that sort of thing. We had a period of time where we were fortunate, had a number of consumer wins, you know, Siri, Roku, Uber, a few more. And, you know, now we do all those things. You know, we do biotech, we do consumer, we do SaaS, we do supply chain. You know, in terms of stage, we're currently investing at about a $1.4 billion fund, and we'll invest anywhere from seed, probably a $2 million check on the low end, up to early growth, you know, probably a $30 million check on the high end, you know, Series C. For me personally, I tend to do most of my investing at kind of that early product market fit stage, you know, 2 to 5 in revenue, 2 to 10 in revenue, is kind of where I generally shake out. But across the fund, you know, we do like to cover anything from seed to early growth across those sectors.
Right on. Well, you know, as mentioned earlier, Menlo, obviously a storied firm here, 50 plus years. I think you guys have over 5 billion AUM, backed more than 75 public companies, et cetera, that has invested across nearly every vertical. Most would represent that as a generalist VC fund. But to me and you, under the surface, you and some of your colleagues have really gone deep, you know, subject of this podcast, around innovation, supporting supply chain and logistics as one theme amongst others. And you've put out some great content on the subject, including both funding the next generation of supply chain disruptors and supply chain on the brink, where you articulate and map out this landscape of opportunity in the sector. And I promise I'll put both of those links, great content, in our show notes for everyone to find it pretty easily. So all that said, how did that very specific thesis form and structure itself within a firm like Menlo Ventures? And then give us more color on what those three fundamental things or themes that you all have identified that are reshaping the global supply chain.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate the kind words on the articles. So you're right. I mean, Menlo is a generalist fund overall, but we really do believe in focused expertise. And, you know, much like you and your fund and investing in the supply chain, we think it's super important for at least individual partners to, you know, really understand a sector in order to pick disruptive companies, in order to win those companies, and, you know, in order to add value to those companies once they've joined the board. So, you know, Menlo is generalist as a whole, but each partner leads what we call a pod. And, you know, in that pod, there's deep relationships, there's deep focus. And so we think we can hopefully deliver the best of both worlds for our founders. You know, the benefits that come from being a generalist fund, you know, the scale, the resources, our talent team, our marketing team, that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, having that focus expertise, you know, which for me is in supply chain. In terms of how that got started, I think, you know, really went back to our first investment in Six River Systems. You know, I had studied engineering in college. I had a minor in robotics and, you know, had always been interested in trying to apply that a little bit to investing, and, you know, had met the Six River team, obviously super impressive folks out of Kiva who had kind of been on that journey beforehand. And that kind of opened up our world. I mean, we just felt like, hey, there's so much going on in the warehouse. There's such a potential for automation. You know, clearly there's connectivity outside of that. And so, you know, something that kind of started out opportunistic, had a little bit of background in the space, you know, really evolved into, hey, let's expand this and do a deep dive and broaden out into supply chain. And, you know, obviously, as you know, and all of your listeners know, I don't think we could have predicted just how much the space would have exploded, you know, coming out of COVID. And, you know, now we see more opportunities than ever in the space.
It's a great start when you pick with the Six River Systems guys to get it kicked off. And I didn't know you had a minor in robotics. That's got to be the coolest minor ever. So well done on the launch point there, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thanks. You know, those guys they were at Manifest too as well.
I saw the booth, yeah.
They're working hard within the Shopify ecosystem there. So, you know, yep. definitely one that was a good kickstart, as you say. And so, yeah, you know, to get to your second question, you know, as that thesis, as that what we call pod has evolved, we've had a number of different things that we've looked out for. And, you know, I'd say the three that we're looking out for now, you may have touched on briefly in some of the articles. First is, we're looking at supply chain enablers. So when you think about Flexports and Convoys and all these other companies, we call them disruptors, right? You know, they're kind of vertically integrated. They're directly looking to take on freight brokerage or freight forwarders. And that's, you know, I think those companies have been very successful and very disruptive. But at the same time, there's a whole industry and a gigantic industry of traditional players out there, you know, whether they're freight brokers, whether they're freight forwarders, you know, customs, that sort of thing. And so I think in response to some of these pieces of disruptive technology, we have a great opportunity for software companies to build automation software that sell to these incumbents, right? You know, we're investors in Parade, which does that and, you know, enables every freight broker to be a digital freight broker. There's companies like Raft and others that are trying to do that for the freight forwarding space. And so I think there's an awesome opportunity to be an enabler and to, you know, deliver best in class technology across more of the traditional ecosystem. You know, I think the third is just ESG and traceability, right? I think there's more pressure than ever for brands to really understand their suppliers, not just tier ones, but going down to tier two and tier three suppliers and really understanding, hey, is this ethical? Are there any violations, anything from the Uyghur Forced Labor Act and others? And so I think there's an awful lot in the supply chain where we're not just looking at efficiency, but we're also looking at sustainability and morality. And you know, quite frankly, consumers expect that their goods are not kind of sourced or made in sweatshops anymore. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity in that part of the market as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank you, Last Mile and Amazon included gets a shout out, but you move from last mile to middle mile, but that what you're calling out, Steve, I guess some call first mile. You got to know your tier one, tier two, tier three suppliers in international waters because of all the, not just ESG and related, but productivity issues as well. I think it's a huge trend. We're just starting to get tip of the iceberg on for sure. And maybe then what I'll do, Steve, is I'll take us back to that second one that we hinted at, but jump back in and go a little bit deeper on. You and I both have a lot of passion around the tailwinds for the LATAM supply chain market, broadly defined. And Menlo obviously invests across categories and across the world. Thus, your team is really well positioned to spot hot technology and regions poised for growth. And I think it was just in December, you called attention to the supply chain market in LATAM with your research piece called Latin America, the Next Frontier in Supply Chain Innovation. You guys are a content machine. It's awesome. And really cited that while COVID era spike in e-commerce activity may have subdued here in the U.S., the elevated level of demand for shipping and delivery has remained high in LATAM market, where internet penetration is one enabler is only continuing to scale quickly. And then you throw fuel on fire for all of this. In the LATAM market, several big exits within the past few years have produced liquidity that's been recycled into new companies. For example, we're seeing a lot of top talent come out of well-known LATAM delivery startup Rappi. I think the stat was they've got like more than 100 new companies have been birthed through that ecosystem. So it's a lot. But really, first, just break it down for us. What's going on in LATAM and why are you so bullish on this part of the world? And then which areas of innovation are you excited about in the region and what do you see coming?
Yeah, for sure. And that is an amazing stat. I mean, it's like a PayPal mafia on steroids to some extent.
It is. Yeah.
See that many smart, talented folks building. And I actually see a lot of things on Twitter recently. You know, it seems like everybody is tweeting about Mexico City at once. And, you know, I think people are trying to get down there for work, but there's probably also a little bit of like, hey, it's an awesome city. You know, let's tweet about how great the ecosystem is, which it is, and then also have a little bit of fun. So, you know, you and I think need to get on that bandwagon at some point.
Hey, I'm Steve, you got to get on the flight with me. You know, the Solvento guys are down there building their fintech trucking platform out of CDMX. So I'm all in on the thesis. We'll go down and have some fun while we do it.
That sounds awesome. So yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about a, you know, a Cambrian moment for logistics, which is, you know, hey, the inception point in which a big player makes a move. And, you know, specifically it's around logistics. It's like, hey, adding 2-day shipping, right? And you think about just the amount of infrastructure that they have to put in, but also the pressure that puts on the rest of the system, right? And so, you know, we saw it with Amazon, we saw it with Alibaba. You see these big regional players really beef up their logistics capability. And all of a sudden, the rest of the market is really no choice but to follow. And you can see that really pick up over the next, you know, really 3 to 5 years as that investment ramps up. So Mercado Libre did just that, you know, in 2018 in Latin America, they rolled out their 2-day shipping. And, you know, with that, I think there was just a lot of upgrades to infrastructure, a lot of investment, you know, a lot of workers in the supply chain, and then, you know, also a lot of pressure on incumbents and other competitors to match them. You hit on e-commerce penetration. I think that's spot on. You know, it's a growing region, and then, you know, you get to see success beget success, right? As you start to have these big exits, you know, even if it's Nubank on the fintech side, you know, there's a lot of people who understand lending and fintech, and you know, can build big platforms there. And, you know, I think one of the other things that's pretty attractive about Latin America is a lot of these companies have proven that you can really scale in a multi-country way, right? And you can start out in Mexico and get big in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil, or, you know, start out in Brazil and, you know, grow there for a long time before getting to other markets. But, you know, if you look at Latin America as a whole, it's just a gigantic market. And, you know, of course, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do country expansion, but the, you know, fair amount of common language and, you know, common infrastructure and buying patterns, I think, really make the opportunity gigantic if you can kind of get a wedge footprint in one market and then thoughtfully expand over time. So I think all those things are in place. And then, you know, what we touched on before is there's just a lot of reshoring and global movement in the supply chain, right? I mean, you probably heard this for a decade, but it really does seem from our conversations that things are accelerating just given the issues with China. I mean, not just zero COVID, but geopolitical tensions. You know, I think some of the fallout from Belt and Road and, you know, some of the over-leveraged countries that are, you know, trying to get out from under the yoke of that lending program, right? Surveillance, just, it makes sense to have a contingency plan, right? You know, and I think a lot of companies are looking and saying, hey, how do we do that close to home? You know, we're reshoring, we're going to have more certainty over our supply chain, we're going to have to deal less with kind of these terrible container delays that we had to have. And so, you know, we hear from large companies like Mattel that moving to Mexico, moving to Latin America is high on their priority list. And again, I think that results in both a lot of opportunity to serve these companies and a lot of investment in the region that I think is a virtuous cycle to startups and others who are going to take advantage of that. And then finally, I mean, just, you know, I think we're particularly excited about some of the procurement technologies in Latin America. You know, there's pretty exciting B2B marketplaces, you know, things like Inventa in Brazil. You know, there's a number of these things kind of in the food supply chain, like Cayena, which we've seen. WareX does kind of more general procurement, and, you know, they've built a really exciting network. So I think there's going to be a lot of companies who kind of come in and really take a leap forward in terms of digitizing that B2B supply chain, right? The U.S. is pretty entrenched with distributors. You know, they'll clearly play a big part in these regions as well. But, you know, there will also be like fair-like digitization that happens in a number of these countries. So excited on that. And, you know, finally, I'd say we're pretty excited on some of the modern 3PLs. You know, as you mentioned, we're in ShipBob here in the States. And I think there will be opportunities for kind of tech-enabled 3PLs to serve the rapidly growing e-commerce segment in that part of the market.
Yeah, I couldn't be more aligned. It kind of has to happen, right? When you start thinking, right, people use the word nearshoring, reshoring. We are an Austin-based fund, so by somewhat geographic proxy, also just digging in thematically, this whole context of reshoring, I don't think people really understand what's going down in Monterrey, Mexico. The level of industrial footprint, and I think from a technical school talent, they're probably producing more talent than anywhere I'd venture to say in North America, just by density. And so you watch this evolution of supplier base, et cetera, forming there. They're all running GDP straight up through the Laredo border, maybe all the way up to our friends in the Perot Hillwood Group or Alliance Texas, one of the largest nations in LaPorte. I mean, that's a national security effort. And we kind of sort of have to support with innovation the LATAM supply chain logistics ecosystem if we really want that to come to light. My soapbox for a moment, but some of those tangible things that I think are great tailwinds for all the trends you mentioned, Steve. So we're very bullish as well.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, you guys can definitely see that more firsthand.
See it on the interstate, except for Austin traffic. That is the definition of inefficiency. So, well, anyways, let's move us forward here. Next question. I usually like to throw out a crowd favorite where we go into what's hot and what's hype, where we look at things that are out ahead or trends, et cetera. But again, late last year, you guys already put out some great trends identified for 23. You did it along some great subject matter experts for Uber Freight, Maersk, and P&G. And the trends you identified were reshoring and nearshoring, as we just hit on, increased regulatory oversight, rise of vertical supply chains, and finally, that enablers will arm incumbents. All four, again, are spot on, and we could spend a long time on each of them. But Steve, maybe pick two of them to give some additional context to and how you're seeing these manifest into early stage startup innovation.
Yep. And so we talked a little bit about the enablers thesis, but I'll just go a little bit deeper. I mean, we were from that event, which I appreciate you mentioning. We were talking to P&G, and you know, some of the things they spoke about was like, hey, you know, the budget for supply chain resiliency, the budget for, you know, really trying to understand these things. Like, yes, sure, there's, you know, there's always going to be tight ROI cases. You know, there's always going to be, you know, procurement that goes up through a big organization like that. But there's just so much pull in an organization like that to make sure that they're ahead of the curve, they're reinvesting. I mean, part of the concern I had was like, hey, you know, we've seen a lot of the COVID chaos subside, right? You look at where container prices are, you look at freight prices, you know, we're kind of back to longer term secular norms. And so it's like, hey, do people have short memories? Do they forget about, you know, the out of stocks and, you know, the general chaos? And right now it seems like the answer is no. It seems like there is really appetite in these large companies. There's innovation groups. You know, I was speaking to Pepsi the other day, and you know, they have a group that looks at like 100 supply chain companies a year and like really is trying to come up with a process for streamlining them through POCs and, you know, really being good partners in evaluating the technology. So, I mean, I just think that that theme is real and there's budget here. And, you know, even when you look out in what's become a tough software selling market, right? If you look at kind of especially tech companies selling to other tech companies and, you know, some of the public results there, I think there's going to be pretty serious headwinds there. And, you know, obviously there's headwinds all over the place if we enter a recession, but I just do believe that there is budget out there. There is appetite there. And some of these large incumbents up and down the supply chain will continue to buy these companies and, you know, invest in the next great wave of supply chain and logistics technology. So, you know, that's one that, you know, you may have guessed since we covered it, but I say that's hot, not hype.
For sure.
And then, you know, I think another one that I'll touch on briefly is just the rise of vertical supply chains. When you think about things like food or pharmaceuticals or, you know, other different parts of the ecosystem, there's just bigger markets than people realize. I mean, if you think about, yeah, I'm involved with a company called Enable, and you know, they're a horizontal platform that helps manage rebates, special pricing agreements, you know, any of the back end finance that happens when goods come to market. And you know, they'll manage that across manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. And you'd be shocked. I mean, you know, the customers that they have, the size of the customers in the electrical supply chain or in the food supply chain. I mean, they have a swimming pool distributor, right? And so you look at some of these big verticals and it's like, hey, there's $7 trillion in distributors bringing goods to market. But like, you know, there's trillions of dollars in food. And so I think some of these vertical supply chains can support bigger companies than you think. I mean, there's a company called Milk Movement, which is like ERP for dairy. And, you know, it's just amazing to see the size of that opportunity, which, you know, I think most of us would think is pretty niche. So I think in these vertical supply chains, just given the size of the market and given the specificity of, you know, moving something like electronics versus moving something like dairy, there are opportunities to build real companies that are pretty verticalized in different parts of the supply chain.
Yeah, and the specialization, not only is there enough juice in just that vertical, but the data that compounds, the understanding of the use cases for those specific customers, you build a really nice moat. And one thing I know about supply chain software, maybe it's a little tougher on the initial go-to-market to get into the account, but once you're in, I'd probably put net dollar retention and expansion as high as other categories I've seen, because it's very sticky once you get into some of these more traditional industries. So great trends. And I think the other two we could probably have a great chat on as well. But Steve, what I do is I always love to bring the podcast back to the people in the arena, the founder specifically at some point. And so I'd love for you to give them some words of wisdom if they're out there thinking about either raising venture or approaching you. And we like to split it, any kind of keys to success to give them as they kick it off or common challenges to avoid.
Yeah. I mean, especially at the early stage, it's just all about people, right? I think the key to success for founders is just focused on getting great people in and steadily replacing yourself with people who are better than you, right? You know, you start off founder-led sales. Some founders are great at sales, some are not, but you got to kind of figure out, hey, how do you get the first people in? And then eventually you bring in a great sales leader. And they're hopefully 10x better than you. They've done it before. They have all the processes, you know, they level up the company. Same thing with product, you know, same thing with customer support, finance, et cetera. And it's just hard to overstate how much leverage and how important it is to focus on those early hires, to not lower the bar, and to make sure that you've brought in great people who are going to just multiply the company exponentially versus, you know, bringing in people who are good but not great. Especially now, I just say avoid trying to do too much. And really make sure you're delivering for your customers, even if it's narrow. I mean, you just see, I think we came in 2021, we came out of such a high-flying environment that founders thought, you know, they could do five things, they could, you know, hire like crazy, they could do all these sort of things, and you know, the capital raising environment would support it. And I think that's rapidly changing, right? And so it's really making sure, hey, you know, even if it's narrow, we're delivering for our customers, we found a repeatable wedge, you know, we haven't gotten too broad in our sales efforts, we haven't gotten, you know, pulled into giant deals and customization. It's okay to, you know, start small, it's okay to start in one industry, it's okay to, you know, really deliver on one pain point. I think that's, you know, the recipe for success for early stage companies. And it's been for quite some time. I think maybe we forgot it briefly in, you know, just a period of exuberance. But, you know, that I think just kind of mission creep and scope at early stage is something to avoid.
Yeah, I think the quote from Gurley is true as ever. Know the game that's on the field, and the markets have certainly shifted. So understand what that means for building a business. Couldn't agree more. Okay, Steve. Well, final part here. We always like to throw out some quick hitters, a little bit of rapid fire Q&A. So if you're ready, we'll jump in.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, number one thing you look for when evaluating a founder within this ecosystem.
Yeah, I really like founder market fit. I mean, supply chain is kind of a strange industry in a lot of ways, right? People are, you know, have been in the industry for a long time. There's certain ways of doing things. I think just someone who has had experience in that part of logistics or kind of really knows the market or really felt the problem firsthand is going to be really strong, often relative to someone who, you know, may be really smart and just kind of, you know, found a problem or, you know, heard about it secondhand.
Right on. One resource could be book, podcast, blog, whatever you'd recommend for the audience to follow in the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think Craig Fuller's Twitter is just awesome. I mean, in terms of the insights and, you know, what's going on, he's just always getting retweeted and always seems to be ahead of the curve.
Craig, he throws it out like it is, no filter. Love Craig's tweets. One person who should be on the podcast?
Ben Braverman, just a super connected guy. You know, look at the great portfolio that he built at Flexport, and he's actually just announced that he's moving on after an awesome run. So maybe he's got a little bit more time on his hands now. He's always been a busy dude.
Yeah, co-founder of Flexport certainly was an active investor in our ecosystem over the last few years. He'd be a great guest and see what he's up to next. Great call. And then finally, best way for folks to reach out to you, Steve, after the pod.
Yeah, I'm just steve@menlovc.com. So shoot me an email. I mean, obviously, super excited about this space and the founders building it, and love to hear from folks.
Right on. Well, clearly, Steve, you and the team, a prepared mind in every way for this innovation curve that's coming to only faster in the supply chain ecosystem, domestic and international. So look forward to trying to find something to work with you on.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun, and I'll talk to you soon.